I'm an addict. My name's Roberta. Oh, this is cute. That's so cute. Let's see. Wow. First of all, it's an honor. I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak. I had a really good day today, man. Really good day. I get up, I pray in the morning, and I turn it over. I give it to God immediately because I don't want this in my hands. And then I do some readings every morning. I do about 20 minutes of readings, and then I start sending out messages to people that are in my circle. And they usually start responding. So now here we're in the we. You know, first I give it the he, then it's the we. Because I got to get out of myself. Because, see, I haven't taken a drug in a while, but I still have a thinking problem. My mind is still the problem, you know. So this is where Narcotics Anonymous comes in. This is where my God comes in. This is where the women I sponsor come in. This is where the steps come in. Because I needed a head change when I got here. When I got clean, I remember a woman, Delphine, she was a good friend of mine from the street. She said to me, your mind's out to get you. And I didn't know what she meant, but I do today. I know what she means today. Anyways, I got to tell you a little bit about myself. I was a liar, a natural born liar. From the time that I can remember, I told lies. I just lied and lied and lied and lied and lied for no gain, just a liar. I was dishonest. I was manipulative. I was a thief. I would go to the neighbor's house and steal their money, steal their change. I was a little kid. So I'm a liar, I'm a thief, I'm a manipulator, and I'm obsessed with the bottle of Paregoric that's under the kitchen sink, because everyone in our family had a bottle of Paregoric, a gallon of Paregoric. And if you don't know what Paregoric is, it was a narcotic back in the day. And my uncle was a doctor, so everybody in the family had a gallon of Paregoric and a gallon of penicillin. And that was a cure-all for everything. And my mother would pull out the shot glass, and I could taste it, I could see it, I can feel the sensation as I'm talking about it now. Ask me what I did this morning, I can't remember. I gotta stop and think. But those times I can remember in detail. I was a little kid, she pulled out the shot glass, she'd put in some Paregoric, she'd put in some sugar, she'd mix it up and it tastes like licorice. So I start lying really early because I was obsessed. Way before a professional use, I was obsessed with that Paregoric. I had an obsession and compulsion right way back then. Before I put a drug in me professionally on the street, I had all the tendencies. So I don't debate whether I'm born, whether it's a chemical imbalance, whether I'm inherited, whether any of that, it don't matter. This is my story and this is what I'm made up of. So I know that if I put the drug down today, like I have, I still have those tendencies. So what do I do about it? Now it's the program. Here comes the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Here comes how it works. Here comes sponsorship. Here comes prayer. Here comes like the group, the home group. By the way, I have a clean date, and it's a clean date. I have a home group that I show up at weekly. I have a sponsor that I talk to regularly. She has 54 years. I get 54 years every time I talk to her. She still goes to meetings. And what she does is she watches for the new person coming in. She goes over to them and she invites them to sit down with her. And she actually sits there and talks to them. Everybody else is shut out. She talks to that new person coming in the door. Whether they come back or not, she has stayed clean for 54 years. You know, so that's what I looked for in a sponsor. I wanted a sponsor that I watched go to the new person. I wanted a sponsor that I watched kept coming to meetings and was involved, not just sat there and had a clean date. I wanted somebody that was involved, so that's how I got her. Because I went through a period where I had a hard time with sponsors, but I knew what I was looking for, and then God dropped this woman in my lap. So anyways, I'm a liar, I'm a thief, I'm manipulative, I'm obsessed with that bottle of Paregoric under the counter. I'm already planning when my mother goes down the cellar to wash the clothes. I got the plan in motion. I'm pulling the step stool over to the counter. I'm climbing up on the counter. This is 4 years old, three, 4 years old. I can remember it like it was yesterday. Pulled the step stool over, climbed up on the counter, got those orange baby aspirins, bit the cap off, and swallowed, chewed them. I like the way they taste. Now, this is all calculating. She's down in the cellar washing clothes. I got it timed. Then I hit her cigarette, because she left her Pall Mall lit on the ashtray. Then I'd hit her cigarette. She'd come up and say, the cigarette's all lit. You know, it's all wet now. The Pall Mall tobacco. I got tobacco on my lips. She said, did you just smoke my cigarette? No. Okay. So now I'm lying, but I got a co-conspirator. She believes everything I say. So she went on with me to the bitter end. She went on with me to the bitter end. She was my number one ace in the hole. Mom never denied me anything. Dad shut me off. 10 years before he died, he stopped talking to me. She hung in there to the bitter end. Anyways, that was part of my amends. I put a wedge between them. I suffer from the disease of addiction. I used to think it was a drug problem. Don't get me wrong, the drug got me here. But then I learned about what I really suffer from. And until I learned what I really suffered from, I couldn't stay clean. Because see, the symptoms kept coming back and kept appearing. And then I kept running out the door. Because it wouldn't take me long to put the drug down and my symptoms are like, blah! I mean, they're loud and clear, and they're still here today. Sometimes they're arrested, sometimes they're not. I just acted out on a symptom with Lexi. Wait. The best part about acting out on a symptom today is I have a 10th step and I could do it. You know, I could take my inventory and correct any wrongs, and sometimes the wrong is just change it. Just stop it. But anyways, I pick up a drug on a professional basis at 11. We're babysitting in the alley up in Bloomfield. My friend Cindy is the babysitter. The woman we're babysitting for, she looks like a regular woman, dressed nicely, neatly, takes care of her kids. Her husband leaves for work. She puts on a mini skirt, hip-high boots. She teases her hair up like this. She got makeup on. She got a low-cut top on. She's hanging out. She's getting ready to go out. Big earrings. And her favorite song is Love the One You're With. She was my idol. She bought us 5 quarts of Boone's Farm apple wine and a nickel bag of weed. I was 11 years old. Everyone's passing the wine. Some are pretending they're drinking and spitting it out. Some are. I grabbed a quart, it was mine, and I grabbed a joint, it was mine. And the first night of me on my own out there getting high, it was unmanageability immediately. Immediately. I passed out, I broke her table. They carried me home. We lived in a row house. They laid me on the stoop. My dad was a city cop. They knocked on the door and ran. They all were afraid of my dad. I remember getting dragged in, and I remember getting, he had a belt on the junk drawer in the kitchen. He sharpened a straight razor, and that belt was used on our behinds. And I remember he got that belt, and I remember I got that belt that night, and I can remember immediate rebellion, immediate. I can remember looking at him cockeyed, and I remember saying to myself, I'm gonna do this as much as I want, when I want, with who I want, whenever I want, and I'm not afraid of that belt anymore. I can remember that. So the first night was unmanageability, drank like a greedy little pig, unmanageability, rebellion, it all set in that first night. And that took off from there. And it just, I did exactly what I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, how I wanted to do it, and with who I wanted to do it. And by the time I was 14 years old, I had a son. I had a little boy that I was dragging around on the streets. I dropped out of school. This is doing what I want, when I want, how I want, with who I want. I have a little boy that I have no idea how to take care of a child. I put him in terrible, terrible situations, dangerous, dangerous situations. To this day, I've made amends. Sometimes we don't get our families back. I'm talking to the people out there that it didn't happen for. You know, we hear a lot of beautiful, beautiful stories and miracles in here of getting children back and families back. That didn't happen for me. And I have learned how to deal with that and live with that in recovery. I have learned how to accept that. That addiction will rob, I'm not gonna say you, nothing about you. Addiction robbed me of everything that has meaning in my life today, back then. But I have been able to get it back through you. Get it back through you. Maybe not the way I want it back, but I have gotten a family through you. You're my family. I have family members here in this room. I have people in my life that are solid. I have people that love me unconditionally. I have people that I would lay my life down for in here. And I have everything back, but not the way the picture, I thought the picture was gonna be. And I had to let go of that picture, because that picture would cause me resentments, because I wasn't getting back what I thought I should get back. And actually, all Narcotics Anonymous does is promise you a day clean. It's hard to concentrate, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's all right. So I picked up at 11 and I just kept going. I was one of them geographical cures. I kept leaving Pittsburgh. I wound up in this tenderloin of San Francisco. I wound up down in Key West in the projects. I wound up getting beat up in New York. I wound up getting beat up in a lot of places. I wound up getting thrown out of an 18-wheeler truck in Lake Okeechobee down in the swamps in Florida. I had no regard for life, especially mine. I had no regard. I never called home to see how my son was. I never called home to see how my mother was. The self-centeredness was blaring. I never sent a dollar home. I called collect. And when I called collect, I usually wanted something. I was getting locked up. I needed something. Send me this, send me that, and do it now. Or get a hold of this one and do it now. And when I think back on that, how the damage, the disease of addiction in my life, and I had no idea about the disease of addiction. And this time when I came in, I remember Dot Talley said to me, because I kept coming in and out and didn't know why. Well, now I know why. I did not know about the disease of addiction. I kept attributing this to the drug. It's a drug problem. The drug got me here to work on the disease of addiction. And thank God that this time I ended up in, you know where we go. I was on methadone 4 or 5 times. I could never adhere to the rules. Back then they had rules. If you used, you got thrown off. And they just didn't transfer you to another clinic and put a pad under your rear end. They threw you out in the street. And so I was on methadone 5 or 6 times. I could never get with the rules. The number one rule was stop using. I couldn't do it. I just kept on. I'd use on the way to the clinic, use on the way back, and use all day through. It was just like a wake-up drink. And I can't treat a chemical with a chemical. It just don't work for me. I tried it, believe me. I came in these rooms. I was at Gateway. Dr. Tversky was here. I took one. No, I was up St. Francis Detox. Dr. Tversky worked in the detox at the time. They were opening. Gateway was taking off. I looked at him. I said, I'm going to work him. I'm going to work him. Dr. Tversky, he's like a freaking expert on addiction, right? I went in. I said, Doc, and I don't even know where this came from. See, lies just came poured out of the mouth. I said, Doc, I'm depressed and I can't sleep. He said, let's see, Roberta. He said, you're 18 years old, you have a four-year-old son at home, your mother's raising, you don't contribute a dime, you're homeless. He said, you dropped out of school, you never went back, you never worked a day in your life so far. He said, the police are calling here, they're gonna arrest you as soon as you walk out of here. He said, that's depressing. He said, and your body will sleep when it's tired. And you know, that never left me. He was the first person that identified somewhat who I was. And he gave me the truth. And it's something hit in the self-centeredness. And I believe that. The core of my disease is self-centeredness. And the antidote is the truth. And I needed the truth and he gave it to me. I didn't stop. But something happened. I never forgot him. I never forgot those words. And I realized that my life is depressing because I'm living a depressing life. But I couldn't stop. I went through a series of detox, rehabs, always got the boyfriend. Always find the funny guy. I liked the funny guy when I was in detox and rehab. Always liked the one, the funny one that made everybody laugh. That's who I like to be around. We'd usually hook up, leave together, and be loaded within an hour, and then beat each other up. And then I'd never see him again. Oh my God, yeah, the boyfriends. I'm not even gonna get into that. That's a whole encyclopedia of experience, strength, and hope. Anyways, I picked water seeks its own level. I'll tell you that, water seeks its own level. So anyways, I was always looking for somebody to take care of me. He's gonna help me. He's gonna help me. He's gonna take care of me. He's gonna get me high for the rest of my life. Meanwhile, I had to take care of them. You know, and then he's hiding behind the clothes rack as I'm stuffing stuff in here and he's giving me signals, that's it. Yeah. And then when I get busted and turn around, he's nowhere around. You know, he's gone, right? But anyways, what happened was, I used for 20 years, from the time I was 11. Did nothing with my life but caused damage in everyone else's. I didn't know how to do anything when I got clean. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I was still 11 years old. I get here and I'm in a cell, and they used to talk about God. When they talked about God, something turned in my stomach. And I can remember saying, man, please. And I was in a cell, and I was at the place where I was ready to commit suicide. My family wanted nothing to do with me. My son was 15 years old, 15, something like that. He hated me. My mother wanted nothing to do with me. I had nowhere to go. People didn't want anything to do with me. And I'm in a cell, and all of a sudden, I'm ready to commit suicide. I'm figuring out how much sheet to tie and hang myself. And all of a sudden, this guy, Billy, he used to try to help me all the time. He's from Garfield. He's passed away since. He was in the cell right beside me, but he really wasn't there, but he was there for me. And he said, you don't ever have to live this way again. Don't take the first one. Now, when you used to say, don't take the first one to me, see, I got a mind that's operating on self-centeredness, and there's a filter in my mind that when you say things to me before the spiritual solution here. When you said things to me, I deciphered it through this self-centered filter, and I really didn't. I heard what fit me. So when they said, don't take the first one, this is what I heard. Don't use the third day. That's what I heard. Because my mind said, the first one's the best one. Why would you not want it? The first one's that's the one you want. The first one, the third day problems start. So I know when I'm talking to a new person that they're really not hearing what I'm saying. They watch what I'm doing. And that's what I did hear, because I could not hear what they were saying. I watched what people did. But anyways, I'm in that cell ready to hang myself, and there's Billy, and he said, you don't have to live this way again, don't take the first one. Well, it was time. It was time. And the spiritual experience happened. And all of a sudden, I heard everything that you told me for years, and I heard it the way you said it. And I heard that I didn't have to use a day at a time. And I heard to pray, that I needed to pray if I wanted to stay. And that's what they said to me back then. If you ain't praying, you ain't staying. And I prayed. And something happened to me in that cell. And I had that moment of clarity. My eyes opened up, pow. My ears opened up. And my heart opened up. I knew I was an addict. I knew what that meant. I knew it was more than a drug. I knew I needed Narcotics Anonymous. I knew I needed you, and I knew I was going to be all right. And that when I got out of there a year later, I ran and got my sponsor, who I had already got my sponsor while I was away. I start working on the Wii. And I was fortunate. I knew a lot of people in here. So I hooked up my Wii while I was away. And when I walked out of that place, I went right into the arms of my Wii. I ran up the Garfield meeting. My sponsor met me. We went right over to St. Francis. We went to the little chapel. We knelt down. We said a third step prayer. We went and got a pen and a notebook, and I started writing. Had I not done a four step, I would not be here. Everything that I thought was, wasn't. And everything that I thought wasn't, was, prior to that fourth and fifth step. That opened up the door to the truth, the antidote to this disease. And it says it in our basic text, honesty is the antidote to this disease. The only way I know how to get to honesty is through the steps. I can't get there on my own. I can't will myself to be honest, because I'm a natural born liar, thief that operates out of self-centeredness, and I'm dishonest. I can't just get the honesty on my own. That's a spiritual principle that comes from you, the whole combination. My God of my understanding, you, sponsorship, the whole thing. I can't just throw a piece of it and say, well, I'm going to join a home group, but I don't need a sponsor. Well, I'm going to do this part, but I'm not going to do that part. Well, I'm going to sit in a chair and I'll let somebody else push it in. I'm going to do this and not help nobody. I'm not going to talk to this person because they're probably going to get high again. No, it ain't none of that. It's a two-way street. It's a two-way street. I need you more than you need me, believe me. And when I sponsor when a new person comes in my life, I let them know, I need you more than you need me. Give me your phone number, I'm calling you. When a new person walks in the door, I always try to make the first couple calls. If they don't respond, that's fine. Guess who stayed clean? You know, because I remember, I was not calling anybody. I didn't know how to call somebody and say, hey, how are you? All I knew was a call where you just, hey, what's going on? All right, let's go. But so I had to get familiar with picking up the phone. And that happened when people reached out to me and people helped me. And I had examples in my life. They showed me how the program works. They didn't tell me how the program works. They showed me. And I felt the spirit. This is a spiritual solution here. I had a bunch of women, Dot Tally, Cookie, all them women, they took me around with them. They took me before I knew what was happening. And they came, we got the meetings early and they made the coffee. And they set up and they would be talking and laughing and they had a light. There was a light in their eyes. And they were the attraction rather than promotion. Don't talk to me, show me. Show me. I need shown. I talked words all my life. I need shown. I need the friendly person to come up and hug me. Or you know, so when I come in, I try to hug people. Some people don't want to hug you, but I'm hugging them. Okay, the only time I didn't hug was after my transplant. But in COVID. But I'm a hugger, especially the one that doesn't want hugged. I'm going to them. Anyways, my life is so good. It's so good. I keep going to meetings. I get to about 4 or 5 meetings a week. I always love looking for someone new. I love the new person. I love the insanity. I love it. I love it. I go to detoxes. I go over Mercy Detox. I love it. I love it. They're in their slippers. They got the little relationship going on back here. You know, that they go, thanks for the speech, you know, to my speakers. And I just love the detoxes. They're nodding at, slobbering, you know. I love the detoxes. I love them. My heart is in giving back. I take this really serious. I take my home group serious. There were a couple ladies that used to come to my home group and talk through the readings. And everybody would complain about them. They talked through the readings every week. And they were here a while. These were a couple women that were here a while. And they're talking through the readings. And everybody's complaining. And I'm getting irritated, but I'm not saying anything. And one day I said like this, look, I just got up. I quietly went over to them. I reached down. I said, could you two shut up? Or take it outside. You know what I mean? This 60 minutes is like sacred. I mean, this is about it saving lives, you know? And I'm just grateful to be a part of this. Today, I'm not into a lot of material things. We get material things here. I have a home that I bought, I paid for on my own. I went to work, I worked for 32 years. I wound up with stage 3 liver cancer, and I'm gonna shut up in a second. I'll tell you this story. So they tell me I have hepatitis C. This is years ago. This is when the interferon and all that crap was out. So I did it once. I got so sick I had to stop. So then they start changing all the meds, and you had to have symptoms. You had to have certain numbers to get the medicine. My numbers were never high enough to get the medicine. So I keep going back every 6 months giving blood work. They keep saying your numbers aren't high enough. So I'm so difficult to get blood. They have to usually get a PICC line in me. I mean, it's drama, drama. I don't sleep nights before blood work. So I said, I gotta quit going. I just quit going. I said, I'm eating right. I've been clean a lot of years. Quit smoking cigarettes. I'm on the trail every day. I take care of myself. I eat right, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not going anymore. 15, 20 years went by. I'm down the beach. My doctor calls. You have stage 3 liver cancer. Never had a symptom. Never had a symptom. Stage 3 liver cancer. You might not get on the list, you're in pretty bad shape. I never had a symptom. I go and I do this chemo. Anyways, long story short, my numbers go down miraculously, one treatment. They thought they were gonna have to do a series of treatments. I did one treatment. Stayed overnight in the hospital, boom, shoot these beads in me. I do one treatment, the numbers go down way below they thought they were hoping. I get on the list. 9 months later, I get a call. We got a donor. A living donor gave me 60% of his liver. They threw mine out. 60%, within 14 weeks, we both had full livers. He writes me a letter, anonymously. He came here from India in 1992 to help AIDS patients. And they find treatment for AIDS patients, so he switched over to liver disease. He gave me 60% of his liver. He went through all the tests. It's pretty intense. He went through everything I went through. He writes me a letter. He worked himself through medical school doing odd jobs. He went over to liver disease. He watched people suffer and die with liver disease. Us. He watched us suffer with liver disease and die. He decided to give a liver. He said, all I want you to do is to take your medicine, live a happy, healthy life, and please pass on to everyone you meet that liver disease is preventable. If you're a high-risk person, which we are, get tested regularly. Get tested regularly. He just sent me a card, an Easter card, and he's taking his boards and his exams. He sent it through the coordinator over there. I wrote him back. I said, I will follow through with what you asked me. And guess what? I'm in the best place to pass this info on. I'm around a bunch of bad livers. So, thanks.
I give you Tim Pig.